February 20. This is our second of three oral matters that this panel is considering. Judges Riley and Rodenberg are joining me, Judge Sleater, and I'll be presiding today. You'll see the clock in the corner, somewhere in your corner of your computer screen. So the rules, of course, the timeline will be followed per our normal procedure, even though we're remote today. We do ask that you identify yourself for our recording as soon as you begin your comments. We will have a separate recording available on the Judicial Branch's website within 24 hours for those that wish to listen to it. So any separate recording is prohibited. And I'll just note at this time as well, this matter is file A211009, the matter of American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees Council 5 is the relator, Ramsey County respondent and the Minnesota Public Employment Relations Board. And so counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, Josie Hegarty for relator, AFSCME Council 5. Thank you. So, to begin, I don't want to get too heavily into the underlying facts. They're briefed sufficiently, and they're not heavily in dispute. But largely, this is a dispute about what was agreed to during contract negotiations between relator AFSCME and respondent Ramsey County. AFSCME brought this unfair labor practice charge to PERB on the basis of a failure to meet and negotiate in good faith regarding terms and conditions of employment with the union representative. The specific piece that we're looking at is the alternative work schedule policy, which was during negotiations, Ramsey County brought proposed changes to that policy, AFSCME objected to those changes, proposed other changes, the county refused, tentative agreements were reached, and then after those agreements were approved through both parties' processes, AFSCME received redline versions of the contract, which contained a rewritten version of that policy, which included changes that AFSCME did not agree to. PERB's decision found that Ramsey interpreted AFSCME's conduct as basically agreeing to those changes, and therefore, that's the end of the day. There is no unfair labor practice. We object to that on the basis that PERB's decision was arbitrary and capricious, affected by errors of law, and not supported by substantial evidence in the record. The primary reason that PERB's decision was arbitrary and capricious is because it ignored an important aspect of the problem that was presented to it, that being whether or not the alternative work schedule policy is something that the employer had the ability to change unilaterally.
Ms. Hegarty, I'm looking at the email where it says, we appreciate the simplification efforts. This is from November 19th. And it says, unfortunately, if the employer is unwilling to accept the union's edits, we will withdraw the issue. Now, you in your briefing say that withdraw the issue, by saying that you meant you refuse to assent. That's your argument?
Yes.
It just seems to me when someone withdraws, like say you withdraw an objection, it means you're giving that objection up. So I'm not sure how you get from withdraw the issue to refuse to assent. Could you clarify that for me, please?
Yep. So the reason being that the policy itself affects mandatory subject to bargaining hours of work. And so the employer can't change it without agreement by the union. When the union made objections, what we were saying is, we will agree to these changes with these additional changes. When the employer refused AFSCME's proposed changes, AFSCME was then, that statement was objecting to changes altogether. It was not withdrawing just these objections and proposals. It was saying, we don't agree to the changes you have proposed. And because we didn't agree to any changes whatsoever, when we later received the redline version of the contract with the entirely rewritten policy, that struck us as the employer imposing changes that we had not agreed to at all. At no point was it AFSCME's understanding that we had agreed to such significant changes to the policy. The policy did have some outdated language. It referred to the department by an older name. We understood that would be updated, but the policy itself was fully rewritten in what we received, and that's not what we had agreed to.
Ms. Hegarty, struggling a little bit with our review standard here and getting to the point Judge Riley raised. It seemed like the board used phrases like there was no meeting of the, well, did use the phrase no meeting of the mind, kind of getting at the issue you're talking about. Now, normally we would defer to a decision maker, but we don't really have, my understanding, live parties just submitted documents, including the document Judge Riley asked about. So do we just interpose our reading of that same document and either we agree or disagree that it meant what you said or it means what Ms. Brady might tell us in a few moments it means? So can you clarify for me how we review under an arbitrary or capricious or if there's no legal basis, factual points in the record such as that document and the board's review of what it means?
And so, the agency decision is entitled to deference in most cases. However, here there is an issue, especially regarding how PERB interpreted AFSCME's conduct there. Specifically, PERB noted there wasn't a meeting of the minds, and yet with that finding still concluded that the county did not change any agreed upon language. Those are inconsistent, and that conclusion only follows from an understanding of the county being able to change that policy regardless of agreement by the union. And that's not the case. And that's the primary arbitrary and capricious argument that we have, is that PERB entirely ignored that important aspect, determining whether or not the policy under question is one that the employer can change without agreement by the union. And we contend that it isn't for various reasons.
But what do we make then, Ms. Haggerty, of the footnote where the board specifically saying we don't comment? That would suggest to me normally that they didn't have to comment. We don't even get to that issue, or that perhaps it wasn't raised, but solely a question of whether there was a lack of good faith bargaining based on that withdrawal language that Judge Riley just referred to. It kind of brings us back there. So how do we interpret that footnote that was included saying that the courts or the board's not ruling on that issue?
So the footnote is strange because it does a few things. One, it cites to cases that don't stand for the proposition that it says that it stands for. One of the cases cited some Minnesota Supreme Court case, which specifically says that employees are entitled to negotiate the number of hours worked. But PERB's decision ignored that entirely and found that despite there not being a meeting of the minds, somehow AFSCME agreed to the proposed changes. And doesn't follow.
Another thing that PERB relied on was, and I'm looking at the bottom of page 6 of its order, and it's your addendum, page 6. First, they reference the email, and then in a document titled Final Resolution on All Issues Submitted by the Union and Employer Separately, the following is stated about hours of work. Quote, employer drafted policy issue dropped by union 11/19/2020. And so that was a document submitted not just by the employer, but also by the union.
Trying to find the page you're referring to.
Did you say page 6, Judge Riley?
It's at the very bottom, yeah. And goes over onto page 7.
Right. And that, to the union's understanding, in the final resolution document, the union's understanding, that was displaying that we had refused to make changes.
But the quote is employer drafted policy issue dropped by union. So
right, and we have throughout the negotiations, throughout this entire process, maintained that the employer can't change that policy without union's agreement. And by the union dropping the issue, that is the union saying we do not agree to these changes. That was at all times the union's understanding. We did not know that the substantial changes, the rewrite of the policy, was being imposed by the county until we received the red line version of the contract after voting on the tentative agreement.
Well, would you agree that it was an unfortunate use of words, withdraw, drop? things like that?
I don't think so. This is pretty standard contract negotiation language. This is how we talk about issues. When we drop an issue, that's how it's referred to. When we don't agree, we drop an issue.
Ms. Haggerty, maybe I'm missing the board didn't seem to consider the issue the way you're presenting it. My question is, I don't recall when I looked at the document which was filed with the board to commence the matter, was it clearly identified to the board? And if so, where can you point that out to me, that the issue is a unilateral decision on can't be made in a non-unilateral way? If you follow my point, I'm not using the right language, but it would seem to me it's the direct issue then, as you're presenting it, is that they, in a non-bargain, an issue that has to be bargained, wasn't.
Yep. So this was presented to PERB in the initial charge, which is in our addendum, page 13. What it says is the policy is specifically referenced as part of the CBA between the parties with respect to work hours, and also contains language pertaining to the allowable length of a workday, and as such is subject to bargaining. We made it clear in our submission that is our position, that this policy could not be changed absent agreement because bargaining is required and it affects a mandatory subject to bargaining.
Well, one of the other arguments by the employer is that the contract says that there are two possible work shifts, as this is my understanding of the argument, one being 5 days, 8 hours each day, another one being 4 days, 10 hours for that day. And so I think the employer is saying that by dropping the language, you can't work more than 10 hours, that was redundant, because by the very terms of the contract itself, there was that, it was limited to the 4 days, 10 hours. How do you respond to that?
So a few points. One, it's, to some extent, it doesn't matter if the language is redundant, because it's not the change that the union had agreed to. We're allowed to have redundant language in our contracts. We're allowed to do that. It's just, but also there is a distinct difference between a workday may include 10-hour shift and a workday cannot exceed 10 hours. That's, for example, if we were to have an issue with an employee working a longer workday and bring that to arbitration through the grievance process, then we have to look at what the difference between may include 10 hours and cannot exceed 10 hours are. And those could result in different outcomes. Cannot exceed 10 hours is a clear prohibition against workdays in excess of 10 hours, whereas may include is not that strong prohibition. And that's the language that was included and was removed. So I don't have a lot of time left. And so, I mean, if there are not any further questions from the court, then I would yield the rest of my time.
I don't see any other questions at this point. Ms. Haggerty, you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal if there's anything additional you wish to comment on. And counsel for respondent, if you would please identify yourself, you then may begin. Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Brady, and I represent the respondent, Ramsey County, in this matter. Ramsey County respectfully requests that the court uphold the Public Employment Relations Board's determination to dismiss the unfair labor practice charge filed by AFSCME in this matter, and affirm that decision on the basis that the PERB reasonably concluded that there was no material difference between the policy position advocated by AFSCME and the policy provision implemented by the county, and further reasonably concluded that AFSCME had clearly and unequivocally withdrawn its objection to the policy provision changes that the county indicated it would make. The PIRB was reasonable in its conclusion that there was no basis in law or fact that the county failed to negotiate with AFSCME in this matter in good faith. PIRB's dismissal was fundamentally reasonable and should not be altered for three reasons. First, it is supported by the evidence and substantial evidence of that. Second, it is not arbitrary or capricious. And third, it reflects no error of law. This is the standard of review assigned to agency administrative decisions, which are entitled to a presumption of correctness and afforded significant deference, particularly regarding an agency's conclusions in its area of expertise. PIRB's expertise, in particular, in the specialized area of labor relations and unfair labor practices, makes its dismissal findings in this matter deserving of such high deference. To elaborate a bit on the factual background here, as has been indicated, the county and AFSCME engaged in collective bargaining negotiations, and the county made proposals to update a policy that was attached as an attachment to the collective bargaining agreement between the parties. This was known as the Alternative Work Schedule Policy. It's included in the appendix and essentially defines operational provisions that the county is implementing. It determines the department's regular business hours specific to this workforce solutions department at issue here, which are distinct from the Ramsey County general business operational hours. It also talks about the workforce solution department's extended hours. And it outlines circumstances, given that it's termed the alternative work schedule policy, it outlines the circumstances under which an employee can ask to have a schedule that deviates from the regular defined schedule. And it provides a process and procedures for approving that type of request. The county's aim in updating this policy was mainly technical. It was intending to have the policy align more closely to the formatting of the general Ramsey County policy template. The county informed AFSCME of its intent to make modifications to the policy and provided a copy of those modifications. From there, it entertained and even incorporated some of the suggestions that AFSCME had in terms of modification. Ultimately, though, as has been discussed already, AFSCME indicated it was withdrawing any continued objection to the county's updates to the policy.
Well, the just a minute. Didn't they withdraw the issue and not the objection?
Your Honor, they withdrew the, at least as the county interpreted it and the PIRB interpreted it, that those were one and the same. The withdrawal was a withdrawal from engaging in further discussion about the changes that were being contemplated.
Did the union posit at the outset that there was a disagreement about the question of whether that's an inherent managerial prerogative?
No, there's no evidence in the record that the union raised that as an issue, though it is reflected in county communications in email between the parties. I believe it was the email that included the withdrawal language that's in question here. The employer responded by saying these are matters of inherent managerial policy and policy matters are outside the employer's inherent managerial right to pursue.
Ms. Brady, then, in terms of the documents submitted to the PERB before reaching its decision, what you just said, I'm understanding there's a distinction between making a unilateral decision in a bargaining agreement versus making a decision that is inherently managerial, so it can't be unilateral. In other words, if it is, so and if it's not, then it, and so that's what we're talking about. I I'm assuming the PERB was presented with information regarding the first issue, but not the second. As I read that, or that the decision, that's what I read a footnote to mean, is we don't get to that. We don't need to get to that. So I'm assuming then it was just simply an issue of whether there was a unilateral decision, which would show a lack of good faith bargaining, and ultimately said, no, there wasn't, because it was dropped. Am I summarizing the legal issue that the board ruled on?
Well, Your Honor, I think the board relied heavily on the factual circumstances and the evidence in terms of the parties' relationship in the lead up to the withdrawal, and also the fact that the policy provision in question did not create any material alteration to the policy as it existed in its original form from 1995. Until the updates were made. So it is correct that the PERB determined that they did not have to weigh in on issues of mandatory subject of bargaining or inherent managerial rights here, because AFSCME had withdrawn the issue and PERB came to a reasonable conclusion based on review of all of the evidence, including parties' communications, the documents summarizing the negotiations process that have been mentioned in terms of reflecting either resolution on the issue, withdrawal of the issue, agreed to the employer proceeding with the policy changes. So that in and of itself took that issue outside. There was no need for the PERB to conclude that it was an issue of inherent managerial authority or a mandatory subject of bargaining, because they relied on the union's withdrawal of that issue from the negotiation discussions. And beyond that, because there was redundancy that the PERB determined in between the way that the policy provisions were written in 1995 and the way that the county proposed to change them in this recent round of negotiation, there was no difference. There was no change in a term or condition of employment. The policy retained the essential fundamental terms that there would be a regular work shift of five 8-hour days, or an option for four 10-hour days. Even outside of the specific language in dispute about whether the policy, Ramsey County has attributed no difference between the phrasing the workday cannot exceed 10 days, and which was what existed in 1995 and is the position that AFSCME seems to be advocating for. But Ramsey County sees no difference in that meaning of that terminology in the way that the phrasing of that reference to the 10-hour workday is in the updated version of the policy, which says that the workday should not include 10-hour days. So there was no change in the term.
Ms. Brady, how do you respond to Ms. Haggerty's argument that the word drop or withdraw is a term of art that negotiators understand to not mean that they are walking away from that issue?
Your Honor, you know, I'm not serving as a negotiator in this capacity, but I can say that I believe the PERB was very reasonable in interpreting those multiple documents in the record to indicate that the issue was being dropped. And in that sense, dropping the issue meant that AFSCME was no longer raising any objection that they had initially presented. So as I've indicated, there really was fundamentally no difference and the county has communicated in email that there was no intent to change the implementation of the terms of that policy. There's no substantive effect on employees who might seek to refer to that policy in requesting some sort of alternative arrangement for their hours of work. The PIRB agreed that these changes were stylistic and technical and redundant, and there was that also accounted for the lack of any necessity to weigh in on the matter of a mandatory subject of bargaining or inherent managerial right issue. They had the information they need based on all of the evidence in the record to conclude factually that the issue had been withdrawn. And even apart from that, there was no change to how employees might be affected by the minimal and non-substantive changes that the county was making to this policy attached to the collective bargaining agreement.
Ms. Brady, just maybe to help me fully understand then, if an issue, if the county concedes a particular issue is not inherently managerial, then that's an issue of which both parties in good faith must come to an agreement. Whereas the point all along for the county, and that's why you referenced the emails in answer to Judge Rodenberg's question, believed number one, it's redundant, but number two, we can do it because it's inherently managerial and that's why we're doing it. And so that's how those two would operate differently. And so am I understanding that correctly?
Correct. So the collective bargaining agreement here in Article 6 also specifically reserves the right to management to determine shifts and scheduling and lengths of shifts. That has not been modified in any way by the alternative work schedule policy and is not otherwise waived in any fashion. And there's been no indication that the county has conceded on that inherent right to be able to determine shifts and shift lengths. Now, the alternative work schedule policy is not even necessarily about that. And this is getting to the footnote that the PIRB made in its decision, which led to their conclusion. They didn't have to determine if it was an inherent managerial right, but proceeded to indicate and inkle that that the case cited would suggest that the length of a shift is not a matter that needs to be negotiated. It is not a term and condition of work that would be a mandatory subject of bargaining. The PIRB, as I've stated, that the evidence is substantial. There's no indication that the PIRB failed to review any of the information that AFSCME had presented in filing the unfair labor practice. There's no indication that they disregarded. I mean, in fact, the footnote is, I think, an indication to me that they were cognizant of that as an issue, but only footnoted it because of the lack of need to have to make a final determination on the issue of mandatory subject of bargaining or not. The PIRB's administrative rules also essentially mandate that at any point that they determine that there's not adequate evidence to support an unfair labor practice charge, that it must be dismissed. And that is what the PIRB appropriately did in this circumstance, and their decision should be afforded the great weight that it's due and be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brady. And Ms. Haggerty, once you see the 5 minutes, you will be able to begin with your rebuttal if you have any. You may proceed.
Thank you. I want to call the court's attention again to the finding by PIRB that there was no meeting of the minds about the changes to this policy. The PIRB's decision, I mean, it found that the question of whether this was inherently managerial or something that was subject to mandatory bargaining didn't matter because there was agreement, but found that agreement happened despite there being no meeting of the minds between the party. And for that conclusion to follow, it requires an implicit assumption that the employer can make this change anyway. Nonetheless,
in other words, it's your argument that the withdrawal of the issue has a different meaning if it's an inherent managerial policy than if it's not an inherent managerial policy.
Yes and no. This is also a policy that is referenced and incorporated in the contract itself. And so we do believe that if it, even if it were managerial, there's been waiver of that managerial authority. But yes, if there hadn't been a waiver, if the employer just proposed, said during negotiations, this is a policy, we're going to change it, and the union didn't agree, the employer would still be permitted to make that change. But here, because it affects the mandatory subject of bargaining and is incorporated by reference in the contract, we believe that it is required that there be agreement. And I will also mention that, as Ms. Brady mentioned, it was apparently the county's perception that when AFSCME withdrew the issue, that was a clear and unequivocal waiver. But clearly from this argument, from the differing positions of the parties, it is not clear what that language meant and PERB interpreted it in a way that supported how Ramsey County interpreted it. However, that language was not a clear withdrawal of all objections. It was definitely a withdrawal, but it was not necessarily a clear and unequivocal statement that AFSCME has no further objection to the policy. I actually don't have much more in terms of rebuttal. And so unless the court has further questions, that will be my time.
I don't see that we have any other questions. Ms. Haggerty, thank you. And thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions we did have today, as well as your briefing. We will now be taking the matter under advisement and issue an order within the statutory timeline.